Fun is not perhaps the first word we'd think of to describe contemporary classical music. Surely fun would be on the list, but if we're working with general impressions of what's out there, fun might be farther down the list than, say, a word like difficult. And any such descriptions, of course, are overly simplified, reductive, and not mutually exclusive. But we do know that distinguished composer Augusta Reed Thomas loves to hear that her music is fun to play. She has pieces with traditional titles, Cello Concerto No. 1, Vigil, Piano Etudes, Psalm 91, verse 11. But even her third violin concerto has a playful subtitle, Juggler in Paradise. There are other names like that, Avian Escapades and Sweet Potato Kicks the Sun. So many intriguing titles of all kinds and captivating pieces from this intriguing award-winning composer. Augusta Reed Thomas sat down with Paul Rand, host of the podcast Big Brain from the University of Chicago, and he cut right to the chase, asking how it is that she's been recognized as one of the greatest living and performed composers today. So, why do you think those recognitions are coming your way? And her answer might seem a bit surprising. I get up super early. Work, 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 work at the piano. Sing, notate, proofread, make the recording, get on the airplane, teach a class, have all my private students at the university, and go to their concert, and then write another piece. I'm so in the trenches, it's hard for me to zoom out and say, how come my work is played all over the world? Because I basically just get up and work. In that sense, I am just a hard worker. On the other hand, what am I working hard at, and why is it that people like to play it, and want to record it, and want to tour it, and want to commission me for more of it? To a certain extent, that is up to them, but I think that if I were to describe my own work, I work very hard to craft things extremely elegantly. I never take a shortcut. I never put a Band-Aid on something. Oh, this isn't working. I'll just throw a Band-Aid on that and keep going. It's a very organic work. And if you change just one note or something, it upsets me. Everything was there for a reason, and it was sort of, quote-unquote, beautifully worked out to be just that. I think people really appreciate when they're playing their notes in their orchestra piece or their part or their string quartet, and they can feel, I know exactly why this note is here. I can feel it. I can embody it. I can play it. One comment I get a lot, at least 10 times a week from people on email and people I'm working with, they're like, your music's so much fun to play. And it's so interesting to me because that word sort of means just what it is. But I hear it from so many different people. They're like, this is so much fun to play. Ultimately, Augusta Reed Thomas continues, I think my music is, for lack of a better word, extremely naked. It's just bubbling up, and I want it to be truly itself. I don't need to put lipstick on it or something. I know what the right words are, but there's a real truth in it that is interesting for me, because otherwise, what am I doing with my life? I am working 16 hours a day. Why would I do that and work so hard unless I'm really digging deep and being willing to be vulnerable and true? And I was thinking also mathematics. You have to think of these things and really work through them, some abstract way of thinking, and find something. It's not easy work. But on the other hand, when you're inside of something, it starts to lead you down the path that it needs to go. And I would say that would be the same for poetry or even for architecture. Many, many things in life, even just for life. And then Rand asks, is there a piece that you've put together that you think really kind of helps symbolize what you mean by that? I think if we were to just take, let's say, the opening four bars. We're talking 10 seconds or so of a string quartet I wrote called Chi, C-H-I, meaning life force. And just look at the first movement. So what you hear there is this line in the violin, and then the other instruments are pizzicatoing. And if you just hear the violin line alone, if you can subtract out the pizzicato in your mind for a second, it could be like a jazz saxophone improvising, or it could be a violin playing a line like that. It's all so fully animated, like the train has left the station. Vroom! It just dives right into itself. So I'm just improvising around it. But you have the sense of these pizzicatos poking the sound. And this line is, one, two, three, go. Here we go. So by the time you're in bar five, the roller coaster is rolling. And I like that immediate energy. It's sort of arresting, like, here we are. And now we're in bar 10 already. A lot has been covered, and the fun of playing that also. And so, for instance, it opens with a note, and then the note's repeated. So that little repeated note, I think that's a great note. It's like if you were dancing, and then you have to do this little tiptoe before you go up. It's just a little jig. It's only the second note of the piece, but a tiny thing like that gives way immediately to the third note. There's a kind of energy flow going. In addition, this opening that the violin plays has got a lot of silence. It's all full of light and bubbles and lifting of the bow and pizzicatos fitting in there. And so, it took me a long time to write it. It ends up sounding just natural, which is what I like. Hopefully they sound like they just inevitably pop off the stage. But behind the scenes, backstage, there's a lot that goes into polishing something so that it can be imbued with that kind of vivacity, color, and sparkle. The Spectral Quartet with the opening of Chi, Life Force. Just that brief time spent with Augusta Reed Thomas surely makes us want to hear more of her music and to know more about how she creates music with such vivacity, color, and sparkle. And thanks to Andrew Wagoner and Caroline Stinson, we can. They are artistic co-directors of the annual Weekend of Chamber Music in Sullivan County, New York. Violinist Andrew Wagoner, also a composer, and cellist Caroline Stinson are distinguished performers and educators, both faculty members at Duke University. And they've invited Augusta Reed Thomas to join them as composer in residence for WCM 2025, which runs from July 14th through the 26th, with intimate concerts, discussions, and open rehearsals among the events. As it happens, Andrew was headed north on Route 81 recently, and he stopped in at the WVIA Benko studio to talk with us about the Weekend of Chamber Music and Augusta Reed Thomas.
It sprang up 32 years ago. In Lake Huntington, New York, completely because Judith Pierce, a brilliant flutist from the UK who had recently moved to the States, was teaching at Princeton. She and her husband had a home in Lake Huntington, and she wanted to play chamber music in the area. She had friends in the area who she played with, and they got together and they convinced a local meat market to give them the space for an afternoon. And they gave a concert and like 100 people came. And they thought, wow, this could work. So they turned it into a series, initially just one weekend, hence the name, Weekend of Chamber Music. It grew to two weekends, and it grew and grew and became really enmeshed in the cultural life of the county, Sullivan County, and then down into Wayne County and environs around Scranton. And it became a force in the way that Judith is a force. And we came on in 2008, my co-artistic director and life partner, Caroline Stinson, and my favorite cellist. She was brought on to play Messiaen's quartet for the End of Time. And we knew right away that this was an unusual festival because there are a lot of series during the main season who won't program a piece like that. And here Judith was doing it on a summer festival, which is really counterintuitive. And I just knew immediately that this was, I liked this woman and I liked this festival. And we started coming every year. She would have me do pre-concert talks. The festival commissioned me. She did quite a lot of new music for, especially for a summer festival. And I loved that when I was composer in residence with the festival, she had me out with the audience, going into all these wacky venues that we play in. And she really wanted me as a composer to interact with the community. And normally, composers at summer festivals are treated like the Tasmanian devil. You're brought in a crate that says, do not feed. And occasionally you're let out and then you're put back in. So eventually Judith decided that she wanted to move on and that she'd kind of had it with 20 plus years of this. And she asked us to take over. And we thought about it for a few minutes and then said, yeah. Because we had been looking for a place to have a festival. I'd had a festival in Maine, off the coast of Maine, back in the 90s. And we had really fond memories of that. And here was a festival ready made. We didn't have to start from scratch. And we didn't really even have to do very much when we took over. We changed a few things. We changed some kind of operational things. We upped the percentage of new music to where it's now about 60 new, 40 old. We instituted a composer in residence so that every year a major figure would come. So we've had John Harbison twice and Joan Tower and John Quirliano and then a lot of younger composers. I decided with the composers I wanted it every year to be boy, girl, boy, girl. And so we've had Joan and Shulamit Ron and then a younger composer named Anna Wiesner. A fabulous composer from the UK named Hannah Kendall, who's a really big deal. And that was pretty much it. We settled in, and we've been doing it now for, this is our 12th year as artistic directors. I know, it's crazy.
And the notion that you could come to the Catskills and do new music in a festival format in the summer, where does the trust come from in terms of the audience who might not be familiar? It's not New York City, so people aren't choosing to go to those venues where they might ordinarily hear.
Exactly. It's such a great question. It's kind of the question. I would rather do it here than in New York City, quite frankly, because we can draw an audience here that isn't just made up of composers. The trust, I think, comes from the fact that the area, Sullivan County, parts of Wayne County, it's a little scrappy. It's not a Tony, you know, sort of buttoned down area like the Hudson Valley. No diss meant to the Hudson Valley. I actually love the Hudson Valley. Who doesn't? But just that over here, the demographic mix is a little bit funkier. We have a lot of artists. We have a lot of professional people who've self-selected to be here and not over there. We have a lot of artisans, a lot of farmers, you know, a little bit of everybody. And they tend to be smart people, but they tend not to be terribly musically, they're not the cognoscenti. And as a result, they don't come with any preconceptions about what they think they should be hearing. And if we give them something that's really vivid and exciting and brilliant and mind-blowing, which we do every summer. Our performances, and of course I would say this, but I'm not the only one saying it. Everybody who comes has said it, that our performances are at the highest level of the art. They're just, there aren't better performances. There are performances that are as good, but not really better. And so when we play a new piece, the audience gets to hear it sitting 10, 15 feet from the performers. And there's just this incredible dynamism, this really almost like volcanic energy that comes out of it. And when we still had pancake breakfasts in the area, they went, you know, the way of the dodo bird with COVID, which is a heartbreak for us because we love them. But anyway, we were sitting at the Jeffersonville Fire Department pancake breakfast, and a woman came up to us who had been at the concert the night before. And she'd heard the string quartet of John Corigliano, which is a half hour long and is really, you know, it's considered a very challenging but very dramatic piece. And she told us how much she loved it, but she said, if I had heard that on a CD, I wouldn't have liked it. She said, I know that I wouldn't have liked it. It was hearing it live, seeing you play it, that's what made the difference. And so that's really it. We found that if we don't talk down, if we don't dumb down, if we don't tell people in advance that they're not going to like it, which unfortunately is what a lot of concert presenters will do, and if we present something that's really beautiful and exciting, people dig it. And so now we're in this funny position of having people come who say the main reason they're coming is because of the new stuff. Because they didn't grow up with classical music. They don't really feel a connection with the old dudes. It's more the stuff that's current that they, and they're excited because they didn't know this stuff existed. And so that's what we're doing, and it works.
You and Caroline must have friends. You know who's out there playing well. You have a network, is the word I'm looking for,
exactly.
of people whom you respect. And if you don't know they're playing, you know people who do.
Exactly, yeah. And then we become friends. And in the arts in general, and of course you know this well, you always want to work with your friends. Because there's an unspoken language and identification and a sense and trust, to get back to that word. And so we work with old friends, and then every year we try to make new friends.
Coming back to the notion of a composer in residence, introduce us to your composer in residence this year.
So this year's composer is Augusta Reed Thomas, Gusty to her friends. Gusty and I are just about the same age, so we sort of came up together in, I suppose our circles looked like Venn diagrams. We were never in the same place at the same time, but we knew all the same people, and we had met at concerts and at, you know, professional things. And I always knew her to be this just incredibly lovely, generous, really curious person, somebody who's really excited about all kinds of music. And I'd been thinking for a number of years that we should have her, and it finally worked out this year. But she's really quite extraordinary because her background is thoroughly, really to the bone, what we call high modernism. And so for anybody who has a kind of stereotyped idea of what contemporary classical music sounds like, this is it. And yet what she's done, which is extraordinary, is that without changing fundamentally how she works or thinks or what she's into, she's transformed this aesthetic into something really vibrant and approachable and beautiful and something that now people aren't scared of. It's cool because in the early 80s, composers my age were kind of going in one of two directions. They were either sticking with the modernist plan, and the thinking kind of was, you know, well, if nobody likes me, who cares? And then another group was really trying to transform classical music from the inside out and take as its model pop music. And so this is where we get the bang on a can movement, which became kind of the dominant force. Well, Gusty did, she stayed with modernism, but she looked at Bang on a Can and she said, I'm putting words in her mouth, but I can do that, but I can do it within this language, and I can just transform it into something that that people will actually want to hear. And she was successful. And so working with closely with Daniel Barenboim and the Chicago Symphony and Pierre Boulez, writing operas for the Opera Garnier in Paris. I mean, working at absolutely, again, you know, this phrase, the highest level of the art. She's become this beloved figure, and audiences tend to fall in love with her music. And so the music we have on this summer is this kind of alchemy of music that's recognizably, unapologetically contemporary, and yet beautiful and varied and fun. She took the emotional range of high modernism from before, which I think most people felt sort of ranged from gloomy to psychotic, and she opened it up to encompass everything. And so we're really very excited to have her.
And so we, as visitors to the festival, audience members, and those who are attracted to what you're doing and to her, will have a chance to talk with her and meet with her. And
absolutely, yeah. The first major event on July 17th is an evening with Gusty at Catskill Art Space in Livingston Manor, New York. And that's where we will play three small-scale pieces of hers, and then she and I will chat, and then the audience will have, you know, full access to her experience, how she thinks about music, really pretty much almost anything. And then she'll be on hand for the open rehearsal the next night, and then for the concert on Saturday night.
How have you decided to frame her visit to you and the pieces we'll hear with other composers or other music?
Another great question. So this year, given that the last few years in particular, we were really pushing the envelope with the new stuff. And there were a couple of times when I thought, well, maybe we have, you know, pushed a little too far. And we didn't. So last summer, you know, last summer's program was all about climate and earth and water. And we did a lot of music of John Luther Adams, and we did a major 20-minute piece of mine. And then we ended with the first string quartet of Elliot Carter, which is 45 minutes long and is really, really powerful. Well, that got a standing ovation. So I thought, all right, for next year, we're going to pull back a bit. And so this year is called The Great Tradition. And representing the great tradition, we have Schubert and Schumann, Beethoven and Haydn, and then the great 20th century tradition of Copland, Gina Stera, Carlos Chavez, and then the great, great British composer Michael Tippett, who's a real personal favorite of mine, but he's not much heard anymore, at least not in this country. And then we have a couple of contemporary composers, but principally Gusty. And the idea is that this whole thing is one unbroken tradition. And so Gusty's music is just the latest example of this great tradition. And so that's the conceit. And when I look at it, I've been looking at it a lot because we're getting the program book ready, I like it.
You pick the pieces and then you invite the players? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, pretty much. Many of the players come back every summer. But this summer we have a few, as I said, new friends, because a couple of people had sudden family conflicts for this summer, things that came up. So we have joining us for the first time a wonderful young violinist named Emma Frucht, and another wonderful young violinist named Julia Glenn, and a violist named Yuchen Liu, who's also new to us. But then coming back, we have Nurit Pacht, who's been, I don't even know how to talk about Nurit. You know, Nurit is a godsend. We first brought her in 2009. So she's an old, old friend. And then our pianist from last summer, Mimi Solomon, whom everybody fell in love with, she'll be back.
Now let's go to this eccentric collection of venues. You mentioned a meat market, but there's the Eddie Adams Farm. Who's Eddie Adams and what do you do at the farm?
Eddie Adams was a great seminal photojournalist who took Many of the pictures from the Vietnam era that everybody recognizes but didn't know who took them, it was him. And so he eventually retired to a farm just north of Jeffersonville. And the barn is a magical concert space. It's also the site of a fantastic photography workshop that Eddie's wife, Alyssa, still maintains. So every year, photographers, photojournalists come from literally everywhere to the Eddie Adams barn. And then we do much of the festival there. So we'll do one concert there this year. And then the other events are at Catskill Art Space, which we've had a relationship there for many years. But since their renovation, we have a performance space there that's really spectacular. But still, it's not a concert hall. It's a gallery, a big gallery space. And so if you come there for a performance, you can be, if you get there in time and you get in the front row, you can be 5 feet from the players. And have an experience of performance and the whole kind of telepathic exchange that takes place between players, and also all the things that are unpredictable about performance. You're kind of right in it. It's really wonderful.
You're someone who is a broad and deep thinker. If we read your blog, if we recognize what you do in terms of commissions, I went back and saw that you were answering a commission that was based in the exploration of physics and those sorts of things. You have an interest that is cosmological, at least in that way. Is it significant that Gusty is or has been at the University of Chicago? Because that's one of those schools where they're deep thinkers and they're humanities and sciences and it all comes together. Is that significant, do you think?
I think it is, but really only because Chicago was, and still is to some extent, associated with this high modernist aesthetic and this way of thinking about music that we won't get into now because, you know, we don't have years to talk about it. But it was sometimes called East Coast modernism because it was really associated with Columbia and Princeton and places like that. But Chicago was sort of the Midwest outpost for that. And I think that's partly perhaps why she eventually landed there. However, the other people most associated with that school of late, composers like Shulamit Ron, who's also a dear friend and has been at the festival. These are modernist composers who are first and foremost humanists and whose experience of music is deeply expressive. And the thinking, I mean, to write music, there's a tremendous amount of thinking that has to take place. But I think for them, and I think for all the best artists and the best thinkers, the whole head and heart thing just becomes irrelevant, right? You're thinking through your heart and feeling through your head, and you're just trying to do something that's really powerful. And so Gusty's very smart, but when you meet and talk to her, your impression is not of a brainy person. It's really of somebody who's just kind of, you know, aw shucks, gee whiz kind of thinking. And the titles of her pieces reflect that. You know, she has a whole series of pieces called Bebop Riddle that, you know, suggest a game, the fun of a riddle, but also a grounding in jazz, which is a marriage, jazz and modernism. It's a marriage that actually makes sense. It has a long history, actually. But those are the kinds of things that are important to her.
And so if we're hearing this conversation and we say, where, when, where do I find this? How long is it? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's officially from July 14th to the 26th, but the first public event is on the 17th. And then it sort of runs down the weekends, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the first weekend, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the next weekend, with on the first weekend, a kids and family concert, also at Cass. And that one is free. And all of the info, along with info on the artists and lots of video that you can watch and get a sense of what we're about, is at wcmconcerts.org. So www.wcmconcerts.org. And if you happen on any of our propaganda out and about, Everything has a QR code on it, so you can scan that and it'll take you right to the website.
Is there anything else we should know at this point?
Well, I just come. Come and hear it for yourself. And if you love music and you have a long history with classical music, come, because you'll love it. And if you've never heard a note of it, come and just come with open ears. And I think you'll love it.
And this is the kind of thing that makes us hopeful, those who love music in general, that if people get a taste of it in person, that's all it takes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a human-to-human connection. And it's irreplaceable. There's no bot that can do what we do.
Violinist and composer Andrew Wagoner, who is artistic co-director with cellist Caroline Stinson of the Weekend of Chamber Music. He spoke with us here at the Benko Studio about WCM 2025 and their composer in residence this summer, Augusta Reed Thomas. All the details are available, as Andrew just told us, online at wcmconcerts.org, wcmconcerts.org. The festival runs from July 14th through the 26th, but again, the first major public event is on the 17th, and the festival will continue on those weekends as he described. And this work we heard a bit at the beginning, it's the string quartet by Augusta Reed Thomas that she calls Chi, for life force. And you'll get to hear that on a concert on July 19th at 7:30 p.m. at the Catskill Art Space, Main Street in Livingston Manor. There will be a pre-concert talk, and the concert will be at 7:30. Also on that program, music by Beethoven, Schumann, and Michael Tippett. For more information on the web, wcmconcerts.org, wcmconcerts.org.